Bean Radio podcast with Dom Chambers. Bean Radio.
Hello and welcome to the In Radio podcast and our brand new exciting strand. And I have to say, we have really delved deep into the pool of innovative creativity for which our reputation soars. Yes, the new strand is called In Radio Conversations. Stunning, isn't it? I'm Dom Chambers, and in a sense, nothing's changed. I'm out and about across the UK with my In Radio microphone, enjoying conversations right across the industry. And in particular, on that mission of discovery of how radio is impacting on participating individuals, on communities, on audiences, and on society. In Radio Conversations is not just about the conversations you're hearing here on the podcast, but also the conversations it triggers. I always welcome your feedback and ideas for new podcasts. You can get hold of me at Radio Today or tweet me at TheDomChambers. And to get it all going, I've chosen a real variety of content for this edition of the programme, dipping in on five conversations I've had over recent months on my radio tours. That naturally includes the annual radio festival taking place in May at the British Library, and I catch up with Sean Childerley, who is the Managing Director at the Radio Academy. And I wanted to find out more about the theme of this year's festival, which is the New Age of Audio. Whilst there, of course, I did nab industry notable Paul Chantler minutes after he'd been given his fellowship by the Radio Academy, and I got his reaction to that honour before broadening the conversation into what is happening across the radio and audio industry. BBC presenter and noted community radio manager Jason Rosam gives us his top tips for people who are getting trained and coming into the world of radio. And then it's off to Wales, and I talk with radio manager Nathan Spackman from Bro Radio in Barry, and we talk about how local radio is developing in Wales. And we also touch on the relationship between local radio, particularly local radio with that community ethos, and how it works with government, whether that's national government or the local authority. And in these podcasts, I always try and include a story of impact. And I've got a corker for you this time, as Abby at Sheppey FM shares her story. And as this podcast so often observes, great radio is about great stories. Here are the voices coming up on the In Radio podcast. In Radio.
I would say, just be yourself. Just be natural. Don't put on an act. Don't put on a performance. Just sit back, relax and speak to one person.
There's more presenters actually picking up them telephones than what people would realise. I think somebody like Greg James, who is so clearly about the audience, how exciting is it if you're going to ring up Radio 1 and actually end up speaking to Greg James, so he's the one picking up the phone?
I think they give you these awards twice in your career, once on the way up and once on the way down, so it's nice to see you again.
The Welsh Government's starting to realise that in Wales particularly, there is less and less commercial radio opportunities or options, and community radio is doing the right stuff in terms of ticking boxes for the Welsh Government, and they're looking at ways of funding community radio, and they've seen that the sector's doing great things, but it needs that little bit of a boost.
I think that people like me who have different disabilities, like with me, I don't have sight, it's taught me that actually I can go out there, I can do whatever I want to do. We have different opportunities out there if we just looked for them.
In Radio Conversations with Dom Chambers.
First up, it's Nathan. And earlier in the year, I decided it was time to plug some gaps in my knowledge of community radio, and in fact radio in general, in the Principality of Wales. South Wales is actually not very far from where I live in northeast Somerset. So frankly, there was no excuse. I contacted Nathan, and he very kindly put together a mini tour around four stations in the Cardiff region. The full account of what we did that day and the conversations we had is for another podcast. For In Radio Conversations today, I'm keen to get an overall impression of where local radio is in Wales. So, sitting comfortably in one of the studios at Bro Radio in Barry, I asked Nathan where he thought community radio is at the moment in Wales.
I think it's thriving, but at the same time it's struggling because there is a lack of money, as there is across the whole of the country. There's recently been a report by the Welsh Government, which hopefully will change that a little bit, where the Welsh Government's starting to realise that in Wales particularly, and particularly within the last couple of weeks with buyouts of other radio stations, there is less and less commercial radio opportunities or options. And community radio is doing the right stuff in terms of ticking boxes for the Welsh Government, and they're looking at ways of funding community radio, and they're seeing that the sector's doing great things, but it needs that little bit of a boost.
It begs a question, doesn't it? Is a community radio station about a local offering from which local businesses might want a benefit of access to listenership to build their custom bases for products and services? Or is it about a wider kind of social agenda to help meet some of the significant challenges of our times? And this could be around health, well-being, employability, isolation, alienation, you know, the dispossessed and so forth. I mean, how do you see those balances?
So I think when community radio was first about, I think it was more social gain. And as the radio landscape has changed over that 10, 15, 20 years, I think it's more become a 50-50. And probably for many like ourselves and maybe GTFM as well, it's become closer to a new local radio because there isn't that option in our areas. But then for us, I'd say it's probably 60% local radio, 40% social side, because a lot of our volunteers have disabilities, partially sighted, unemployed, struggling to get work, struggle from Asperger's or autism. So there is that social game where we're delivering local radio, but the people delivering the local radio are the social change as such.
And actually, I mean, the two positions I outlined are not incompatible at all. And what excites me, though, is the idea that community radio becoming increasingly the local radio station, but then it's got all those charitable purposes packed into it. So it's pretty compelling stuff.
Yeah.
So dwelling on that idea of how a radio station is funded, how much in Wales do you think funding comes from central organisations to achieve those kind of social gain outcomes you're talking about? And how much is down to each radio station to generate their own revenue?
So back in 2014, there was a fund called the Community Radio Fund, separate to Ofcom and DCMS's Community Radio Fund, which was run by the Welsh Government. And that was a three-year, four-year trial to try and see if the Welsh Government could fund community radio in Wales, help it to thrive. The outcome on the final report in 2014-15 was really positive. Every station that received funding had seen growth in advertising, in social gain, in just general awareness of the radio station. However, for some reason, the Welsh Government decided at that point, we're going to end that. In recent years, it's come up, there's been a consultation called Radio in Wales by the Welsh Government, and they've been looking at Radio in Wales and what it's doing and what it's failing in. And largely that report sees that the offering that's being offered by community radio is great, but also now looking back on it is going, well, the final report for that community radio fund was brilliant. It said it did amazing things, yet we stopped giving the money to them. And also from the conversation we're having with our local AMs and politicians are starting to see that community radio actually has a great way of delivering the social gain that the Welsh Government is trying to achieve with things like unemployability and trying to get employment rates up and people learning Welsh language, etc. And things like the Camat Homes are running around the Six Nations for Domestic Abuse. So they're starting to see that community radio is a ideal platform for getting those messages out there. And the discussion from the outcome of that report is about bringing that community radio fund back. Back in 2014, it was a roughly £100,000 pot divided between nine stations. There still are nine stations on air. So that little bit of extra income would really benefit us, particularly since that fund went. We were meant to get a lot of advertising from media agencies. However, the issue always comes with media agencies is they're delivering for the Welsh Government. There is a social change thing they have to deliver with these campaigns. However, for a media agency that's either based in London or Cardiff or somewhere else, if a radio station doesn't have radar or doesn't have proper listener figures, they struggle to buy with them because for them, there's no proof of actually it reaching anyone.
So at this moment of time, you're not carrying paid for content of public interest or perhaps for health and well-being?
So we are from time to time. The agencies advertise with us all from time to time, but there's no fixed structure. Whereas previously we were given a pot of money and told every time an advert comes on for the Welsh Government, here's the advert, put it on as much or as little as you can. Now we get £100 here, a couple of £100 here, nothing really fixed. However, on our scale locally, we do deliver that with our local council. So we've got partnership with our local council, Deed of Grant, that says that we'll promote their services and what they do as a local council. So that includes the health and wellbeing side of things, their local volunteering and time banking scheme, and anything down to, as well, the complete other end of elections, leisure centres, and everything else the council does as an organisation, even down to bin collections, how that changes. So we advertise that we do, but in with our local council, not with a national level, I suppose.
I'm picking up from you that there is a sort of shifting scene in the relationship between the government and Wales, yeah, and the community broadcast network. How do you see that developing in the future?
Quite well. I think all of us have got great links with our local assembly members, which is probably what's helping the landscape. All of us regularly see, meet our AMs. I think that helps because I suppose commercial radio stations don't get out and see them as often as we do. And because we've got those close relationships, that's really helping us to build that relationship. But then also recently we were visited by Beth and Saeed, who is the chair of the Culture Committee for the Welsh Government. She's an AM for Neath and Port Talbot, and she's very keen on local broadcasting. And she came and had a look around recently and actually launched the report here in our studios. I think building those relationships is the only way really forward for us, and also them going back to their constituencies and saying, you know, well, they've got a great community radio station in Barry or in Pontypridd or Cardiff, and going back and going, why haven't we got one in Neath or in Pembrokeshire or anywhere else? So it's given a positivity, because one of the things that always comes up in these reports is compared to the rest of the country, Wales, the uptake on community radio is a lot lower. There's only 9 of us for a coverage area compared to, I know obviously England's a larger area, there's 200 odd in England. There's not as many in Wales, considering how many towns and villages there are and potential there is for community radio. So I think AM's going back to the areas and saying how great we're doing and saying, well, why don't we have this in our area, is only beneficial for the sector, because if there's more of us, there's more ways to work collaboratively, work together, and we can learn from each other a little bit more.
Sticking with this idea of public funding being used to support community radio, I feel that there's a balance to be found between a radio station that is used to state handouts and actually then builds a model around that can be quite dangerous. Yeah. The other end of that pole is where you get what should be considered as a social investment into your organisation, so you, on a kind of principle of the parable of the talents, can multiply it. Now, talking to you, Nathan, is I'm sure that you're in that second category, but can you make the case for why public funding should be used to support community radio?
So in terms of relying on public funding, I'd say from our point of view, when our funding came up for renewal last year, we purposely made a point of trying to get our sales up to a level where we could sustain ourselves should that funding not be renewed. Thankfully, the time that it came about, we had heavy snow, it was in March last year, and that probably really benefited us to try and show the council in that week what we can do as an organisation. I think public funding used wisely can really benefit local community. For the local council, the reason they fund us is partly it's the social game, but for them as well, it's a great way to get a message out there to a certain type of people. Our audience traditionally isn't a Heart listener or a Radio 2 listener or a Capital listener or any other. They're someone who tends to be unemployed, retired, lives by themselves, the kind of people that council struggles to reach. So there is a benefit for them on that side of point of view, but also seeing that they know that they give a certain amount of money every year and they can see that this many people leave the organisation with skills, they go on to employment, we're working with people who have got a chance of never getting work because of their disabilities. So that would be kind of my reason for saying that it's worth getting the public funding, but I'd say try not to rely on it, because I know of other radio stations that have relied on it and then when it's been pulled away, they've struggled to kind of get themselves back on a steady pace, and it's taken a couple of years for them to get themselves to a place where they can continue and be sustainable.
Bro Radio's Nathan Spackman talking to me there earlier in the year. At which point it seems timely to mention that later in the year we'll see caravans of radio enthusiasts and community radio people wending their way to South Wales and Barry, where on the 26th of October we're having this year's Community Radio Now and Next. That's a partnership between Bro Radio, who are hosting, the Radio Hub, which is a great networking organisation, and the Local Radio Alliance, which I launched a few months ago. This is the second year we're doing it, bringing everyone together for what they like to do the most, which is talk to each other and network. But inevitably, we all want to know more about revenue streams and how we can make them relevant to our own organisations. And as far as the next part of Now and Next goes, well, we're inviting a number of teenage radio and audio enthusiasts to come along and share their stories on why this is an industry that they are part of and want to get further into. Keep an eye out for that. The event is free, but you will need a ticket. Community Radio, now and next, 26th of October, on Barry Island, which you might just about have heard of in a slightly different context. For now, though, let's go back to a sunny day in May when the great and the good, and even the decidedly average, of the radio industry met at the British Library. And I caught up with the Radio Academy's Sean Childerly to find out how the day had gone. In radio. Well, we're at the tail end of what has been a fantastic day. This is the annual radio festival under the theme this year of the New Age of Audio. How's it been for you and the Academy?
I think based on the feedback I've had throughout the day, I'm absolutely delighted. There's obviously a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of effort that goes in from the whole team. The measure, I think, of the success has been the fantastic comments I've had from everybody today. So I'm really pleased.
And you're fairly new in the job at the Radio Academy. So quite daunting, really, because this is, it's got a good reputation, this event.
I think there are numerous elements to getting something like this right, and there are things you can control and there's things that you can't. The amount of times I've heard about how great the weather's been in the past events, and I'm thinking to myself, don't think we can do an awful lot about that, but actually it's all come together, including the weather, so yeah, it's really good, really good.
How did the Academy decide on the theme? I mean, I have to say, the title of the theme is very appetising. How was that arrived at?
I think the themes ultimately find you. In the end, we talked about numerous different things, and I guess you want to try and keep the theme in itself feeling fresh, but you don't want to force people into thinking something. So actually posing something as a question seems sensible. And so much has changed that we eventually got to the point where we're like, well, actually, are we in this new era of audio, of radio? And I think collectively we felt that the answer is probably yes, but that's what we should loosely initially base everything around. And actually I think that's come through today, and a lot of the new stuff around podcasting, but around the changes that we've had on some of the major breakfast shows as well.
One of the early sessions today sort of mooted the question, is live a thing of the past? That's because of the massive popularity of things like podcasts, which are appealing much more to younger people and the listeners of tomorrow. For me though, I do both, and I feel that there's room for both live and on-demand services.
I can't imagine that we will ever be in a time where we are not producing live content. People want that immediacy. You know, the news in itself is always going to need to be that. It needs to be, at the moment. I just don't think we can ever be in a position where we don't get that kind of content. Everybody likes that kind of immediate access to something.
I think what was interesting, what I've learned about today in podcasts, is that for specialist subjects, I mean, Brexit, I'm not sure if anyone else describes Brexit as a specialist subject, but it is obviously the big issue of our times. So those looking to get their updates will want more podcasts coming, but at least then they're getting the dedicated subject. They're not having to listen to general news stations just to wait for their particular update.
The thing is, people want the opportunity to interact. So, you know, podcasts are great because you can sit, you can listen again. And if you really want to absorb yourself in a particular topic or a particular show, you can do that and you can absolutely fill your boots. But if you want to be able to interact with somebody right there, right then, that's something that's really exciting. I remember a few years back tweeting into Radio 1 and that tweet got read out on the radio. And that we have to remember to people who are sat on the other side of radio, that is an exciting moment. And whilst you can interact with, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all those social media platforms of something that is a podcast, you're not necessarily going to get that immediate response from that person who's talking to the rest of the world or the rest of the UK at that moment in time. That's exciting.
And I think there's huge room for that kind of interaction through social in the world of radio. And actually, your story reminds me of a story. The first time I ever used a car phone, I was in a car and I was so amazed to see it. This has been about 1987, I suspect. And I rang Radio 1 because we were listening to Radio 1 going up the M1. And Mike Reed, whose show we were listening to, actually answered the phone. We nearly crashed a car. We didn't think that really important people might answer the phone. But of course, that it has demystified it. And the same with music artists, of course, can connect with their public much more.
I think that you'd be surprised, probably there's more presenters actually picking up them telephones than what people would realise. I weirdly actually had that conversation really recently about that happening on a couple of shows where the presenters are actually doing the interactions with the audience. And I think somebody like Greg James, who is so clearly about the audience, how exciting is it if you're going to ring up Radio 1 and actually end up speaking to Greg James? He's the one picking up the phone.
There was a couple of moments today when I was really physically nodding my head like a puppet. Firstly, when Frank Skinner said that he was really inspired by Good Morning Vietnam. He wanted to be that kind of crazy kid with the knobs and buttons. He phrased it slightly differently. And I thought, yes, it is the excitement of doing things live. But also, much later, towards the end of our day, Simon Mayo saying that in his view, creating podcasts was the use of good old-fashioned radio skills.
I'm sure, look, the simple fact is that we need the same skill set from the last however many years, I think, really. There probably is new skill sets that people need to take on board. You can't ignore the fact that technology, that social media is going to play a massive part. And anybody who wants to stay on top of the game needs to be able to understand how that is going to impact on the way that radio plays a part or audio plays a part in everyone's lives. So I think there are probably new skill sets, but fundamentally we need good talent, good people, good producers, and somebody that's going to make us laugh or cry, possibly. Don't.
What's your takeaway point from today? What have you learned?
I think for me, the Radio Academy should be and hopefully is here to bring people together. And we kicked today off with Camilla Bick doing a breakfast networking session. It's really important that we are keeping in contact with everybody across the industry. The amount of people who I've been able to say hello to today, who I've met again, I think the takeaway thing is to remember that there are lots of people out there, particularly we've launched 30 Under 30, so there's lots of young people that we're trying to reach out to as well. Keep communicating, keep networking, keep reaching out and making sure that when we do an event like this, we can continue to do sellout events, because actually a sellout event is an exciting event because the atmosphere and, again, the networking, it's all here.
Tough question, this. What do you think we'll be talking about this time next year?
Oh, crikey. It is a tough question. I have no idea. Put me on the spot. I don't know off the top of my head. Hopefully how good this year was.
Well, I'll let you off that one, because you and the wider team at the Academy have worked so hard to put on a great day for us all and a great day for the industry. So I should go and have a well-earned rest, and we'll pick it up again when that agenda comes along.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dom. Nice to see you again.
It is the radio industry's annual big event, and as Sean was saying there, putting together a day like that of such quality is a real team effort, and I thought I'd take the opportunity to mention who the team are. Chair of this year's organising group is Jonathan Arend. The creative director is Nick Pitts. Festival director, Nikki Holliday. Sean Childerly, of course, heavily involved as the MD of the Radio Academy, as was Deputy Chair John Dash, and other team members Ian McIntosh, Lucy Goodwin, Dixie Stewart and Grace Hopper. That team and the Radio Festival, of course, is an offshoot of the activities of the trustees of the Radio Academy, and this seems a good time to mention that they've kindly invited me to join them, and I'm loving working with everyone as we plot and plan a great and glorious future for the Academy as a fair reflection of the radio and audio industry, which it seems is in pretty good shape. Which brings me nicely around to my next conversation with industry notable Paul Chandler. And when I got to Paul, he was still recovering from the surprise of being honoured with a Radio Academy Fellowship.
I was absolutely surprised, gobsmacked and incredibly honoured to be given the industry's highest award, a Radio Academy Fellowship. And they only give about, I don't know, half a dozen a year. And I had no idea that it was going to happen. And John Riley, who's the head of Sky News, who actually was the work experience boy at the first radio station I worked at, but is now the head of Sky News, he came onto the stage totally unexpectedly. And I thought, what's he doing here? And then it all became clear when he started saying that it was going to be awarded to me. So I'm incredibly proud. I'm still trying to take it in now.
There was a moment when I think Invicta was mentioned and the room realised it was you. What stage did it dawn on you this might be about you?
When Invicta was mentioned, I think really. I thought John was going to come on and pontificate about something or give us a newsflash. He's very serious when he does these things. It was a great pleasure, and it is a great honour.
Well, many congratulations, and I think I tweeted that, it highly deserved and a strong industry notable.
Thank you, Dom. And yes, as I said, I think they give you these awards twice in your career, once on the way up and once on the way down, so it's nice to see you again.
Tell me where it all started for you.
Well, it started in hospital radio, and when I was 13 years old. In fact, it didn't start then. It started when I was about 8 or 9 years old. And I remember making programmes for my grandma on a small reel-to-reel second-hand recorder. And then I moved to hospital radio, did that. I'd hoped to get into the BBC, but I didn't have a degree. And I didn't go to university. So I went into local newspapers, and then from that I went into commercial radio news as a newsreader at first. Then I became a DJ, did all the club road shows and things like that. Went back into news, BBC local radio, as a breakfast show presenter in Wiltshire. In the 90s, I ran three of the big radio groups as programme director. Ended up at Talk Sport, even though I know nothing about sport, as programme director. And then I've been a consultant since 2002. In that, I sort of work all over the world and work with managements and DJs and journalists to train them and improve what they can do for the audience.
You alluded to there some early days prejudice about not getting a degree for the BBC. But one of the tributes that's been paid to you today is that from an early stage you said news is about people. And I just wonder if perhaps not going to university or whatever, perhaps remaining in a non-academic environment, actually ultimately held you in good stead for your career.
Well, I think you've made a very perceptive comment, if I may say so, because there was a sense in the 70s and 80s that you go straight into BBC local radio from university and you haven't really experienced life. But the 4 years, 6 years I spent in local newspapers, I went and sat in, all sorts of homes to talk to people and interview them, went to report on crashes and fires and you have to do that awful thing, the death knock, where you have to go and visit people whose son's just been killed in a road accident. And as a sort of a 19-year-old, 20-year-old, that's quite intimidating, but it's also quite character building, and it helps you to persuade people to talk and share. A lot of the people that you'd visit in those circumstances are actually quite welcoming, and they would want to talk because they'd want to see the tribute to their relative who had died. But yes, incredibly character forming, and you are absolutely right. I think I might well have missed out on that had I gone straight into the BBC and started to deal with bigger stories.
We're here at the Radio Festival. The theme of the day is the new age of audio. You've been a long-established person in radio and audio, we should mention, career. How do you see the contemporary landscape?
I think it's wonderful. I think you've got the big BBC brands, you've got the big commercial radio brands. I think you have there's a fire engine. I think I ought to chase it. I'll stop there. The big BBC brands, the commercial radio brands, you've got the new wave of local stations in community radio, which is coming through. Once the restrictions are off, I think that'll be a big wave. And I think you've got podcasting alongside that, and podcasting takes all of the traditional skills of radio, interviewing, writing, presentation, editing, and repurposes them for something new. And I don't think radio will ever die. I think there's always been lots of predictions of its death, but I don't think it actually will die. But in fact, podcasting is a fantastic complement to it. And I think one of the speakers, I think it was Mike Newman, who from Audio Boom, said in one of the sessions earlier on, it's like radio is like the front page of a newspaper, podcasting is like the double page spread inside. Great analogy. That's exactly right.
You've had so many kind of aspects to your career in radio, but just as it was actually an ambulance, but as the siren went past us, you instinctively said, oh, I should be chasing it. Is the news reporter always in? Is it the instinct to follow a story?
Sadly, it is, because whenever I hear a siren, I do want to look, and I do want to know that there's a news story at the end of that somewhere. And I remain an unapologetic news hound. And I still, you know, if there's a big news story that breaks on Sky News or anything like that, I have got my iPad on BBC News, I've got the TV on Sky News, I've got Radio 5 Live on, I've got LBC on, and I'm listening to all four simultaneously. But from a professional point of view, I want to compare how they do things, but also I want the information about what's happening. So yes, it's a bit of a sad indictment that whenever I hear a siren, I'm looking, all my ears prick up.
What would you say to a young person thinking of a career in news?
I think go for it, because news is always going to be around. I think the method of delivery and the means of gathering it change. But I'm just about to write a new book all about news writing. And I did one 10 years ago about radio journalism generally, co-authored with Peter Stewart from the BBC. And we reviewed that book in order to work out what to put in the new book. And actually, a lot of the stuff is out of date, but some of the stuff about writing and news gathering and news presentation is timeless. So we're going to repurpose that to redo that book. But, you know, most people who go into radio news or news generally just have curious minds. And that's the important thing. You always need to be curious, always need to be listening, and you always need to be talking to people.
Where do you think the industry is with its local radio offering at the moment, particularly after the sort of seismic shifts that's been going on in the commercial sector with Bauer buying up a lot of independent networks?
Well, I think Global have consolidated their local offering into much more of a regional and a national offering, and Bauer will follow suit, probably not as extensively as Global. We don't know yet. I think that BBC local radio is going to be reinvigorated under the leadership of Chris Burns, and I think it's going to be given a lighter touch. I think it's been a bit too newsy. What's happening in the commercial sector is a real opportunity for BBC local radio, and you know, I think that's great. And you have community radio, and I'm an unashamed fan of community radio. I think there has been a case in the past that a lot of people in full-time professional radio have been a bit sneery and snobby about it. I haven't been one of those people. I think it's incredibly important that restrictions are lifted and that community radio is given an opportunity to go out and earn money and to invest. And I was at a community station, a nascent community station in Petersfield at the weekend, and I was amazed by the amount of enthusiasm that there is among all age groups for of what the BBC would call ordinary people. Ordinary people, how they want to get involved in radio. Fantastic. And so I think the combination of a reinvigorated BBC local and a newly born community radio will compensate for the loss of some local commercial stations. Because, you know, the commercial stations, I don't blame them. They have to make money. They're in it to make money, and they perceive this as the best way to keep their costs low and to maximise. You know, the commercial radios like Heart and Capital and Bauer stations like Absolute and Magic and Kiss, you know, they have got advertisers excited about radio again. And that went away in the 90s a bit. But now advertisers and advertising agencies love radio, and that's thanks to Bauer and Global. Let them go ahead and do that, and then local radio becomes something different.
Local Radio Day is due to be celebrated on the 24th of May, set up by UKRD a few years ago now. And their legacy is very, very strong on this. I think over 80 stations supported it in 2018. And we're looking like a good collaborative cross-network ethos for 2019. What's your view?
I think Local Radio Day is a very, very worthwhile thing to do. I was impressed by the way that UKRD set it up all those years ago. It wasn't that long ago, but yeah, it was a few years ago now. And you're right, I think it will be a legacy. Every year it seems to get stronger with better ideas, and it seems to get bigger, and more people are involved with it, and more stations get involved with it. And it's a great flag waver. And I think it's a great way to say to the listening public, you know, here is a particular sort of radio that you may not have experienced before, but you ought to give a try to.
Paul Chantler, really good talking to you. Many thanks, and congratulations.
Thank you, Dom.
In Radio, conversations with Dom Chambers.
I'm just going to mention that one of the things Paul does these days is he's a director of Fix Radio, and that is a radio station targeted at builders and tradespeople, which I can personally resonate with, having spent years being a decorator, listening to the radio and thinking, ooh, I might do it this way, or I'd do it that way. Well, it was my way of financing myself as I was building my radio skills to hopefully one day turn professional. And I remember well the magic moment when I was able to hang up my paintbrush for good. Story for another occasion. As you've probably worked out by now, that conversation with Paul was recorded before Local Radio Day taking place in late May, and I'll try and report on that on a future podcast, but I can tell you that at least 91 stations across all local radio networks participated in Local Radio Day 2019. And now I want to remind us that when I launched the In Radio podcast, whenever that was, it feels like well over a year ago, one of the key purposes was to explore the educational side and the training side of what happens in the radio industry. This is very much a preoccupation of my daytime job, which is managing Summer Valley FM in northeast Somerset. And of course, I launched a charity in 2017, the Summer Valley Education Trust, which takes to a whole new level the positive impact on people's lives and their opportunities of communications and media training. So it feels very natural as I'm travelling around the country to ask people who are involved in training and building those radio skills what their tips are. And such an opportunity arose back in April when I made my way over to the East Country for a Radio Hub networking event taking place in Sheerness on the Isle of Sheppey. From London's Riverside Radio and also a BBC radio presenter, I collared Jason Rosam to get his thoughts on the three essentials of radio training, which is good practice, technical competency, and legal and compliance. And I began by asking, what is his advice to somebody who wants to become a radio presenter?
Just be yourself. Just be natural. Don't put on an act. Don't put on a performance. Just sit back, relax, and speak to one person. And just chill and be yourself. That's the main thing. That's what I think is the best presenters. I want to listen to people who are themselves, who are energetic and are happy to be there. I don't want to listen to someone miserable on the radio, and someone who enjoys the music they're playing and enjoys being in the community and talks about the local community. We do a lot of news at Wandsworth Radio. It's a strong part of what we do, but we need news people who are interested in local news and who can portray that on air in an interesting and exciting way. And so I'd say just go in with your passion and just be yourself.
And what would you say to an upcoming emerging broadcast talent in order to encourage them to attain technical competency?
Technical competency, just keep doing it. So be there, watch everything that everyone else is doing. Before you go on air, make sure you know exactly what all the knobs and faders and everything, how everything works and how all the system works. We provide training, all community radio stations provide training. It's a fantastic place to start, and just do lots more of it, as much as you can. If you really want to get into the industry, then community radio, I think, is the only place now, some hospital radio as well, but you're getting that live on-air experience, and community radio is a fantastic place to start. Some of our people have come from different walks of life, started out in community radio. We've got people working at Radio 1, at Talk Radio, at LBC, huge commercial radio, BBC radio stations, just by doing a couple of years at Wandsworth Radio, and they've managed to move into the industry because they've learnt the skills that you need in live broadcasting with us in community radio.
And what is your tip to emerging talent so that they don't let themselves down or their radio station down in a kind of legal and compliance sense?
Just be friendly, warm, and do not say anything that you wouldn't say to someone's face. You know, just be nice. If you've not got anything nice to say, don't say it at all. Just be friendly, warm. Think about what you're doing. I mean, it's difficult when it comes to journalism. That's why there's extra training that is provided when you want to do journalism and news. So take as much training and learn and read books on media law and find out as much as you can. Use your common sense. That's what I'd say.
I think I've outlined, broadly speaking, the three areas of training that create an acceptable level of competency before we might let somebody on air. Do you think it would be helpful if there was some kind of standardized basic competency certificate to achieve those three outcomes of training?
Absolutely. I think having a basic competency certificate in training, in what to say, in what to do, in technical, how to be a presenter, and all the legal requirements as well, would be something that would be fantastic for us and all community radio stations, because it standardizes everything. It would make it much easier for us. There's not much time in community radio. You've got lots of things going on running a community radio station and having your own jobs as well. It would really help. And it's something that would be fantastic for all community radio stations to have.
Right, squirreling that one away as a demonstration of need. Many thanks to Jason there. And I'm not quite sure why I haven't made it to Riverside Radio in Wandsworth, not least because that's the stamping ground where I first volunteered in hospital radio myself, and it's a part of London I'm very familiar with. And of course, since those days, Jason and the team have developed a fine local radio station for that part of the world, and I'm fully intending to get there soon to find out more about what they're doing. For now, though, it is time to think about bringing this podcast to an end, but not before a wonderful conversation I had at the 2018 Community Radio Awards in Sheffield. And my good friend Julie from Sheppey FM brought over someone for me to meet.
Hi, my name's Abby. I'm from Minster on the Isle of Sheppey in Kent. I'm 20 years old and I'm completely blind. I have a condition called bilateral anophthalmia, which means I was born without eyes.
And tell me what you're doing here today at the Community Radio Awards.
I was nominated for Newcomer of the Year, and I've just won a silver award.
Well, many congratulations. Tell me how you got involved in community radio.
One of the DJs from Sheppey FM is a family friend, and my grandparents, as a surprise, arranged for my 20th birthday for me to go in for my first trial show on the radio. I'd never done radio before. So it was a complete surprise to me, and after this one time I had a little think about it and said, right, okay, I want to do this permanently. So I went in and asked if they would take me on as a volunteer, and well, gladly they said yes.
And a short journey from there to here by the sounds of things. How do you feel about getting silver in the Newcomer of the Year?
Well, considering I've only been doing it for 9 months and a couple of years ago from now, I never thought I would be interested in doing radio, so to find myself starting out on my 20th birthday and 9 months later, here I am. It's a bit of a shock. Quite amazing, really.
I know Sheppey FM. I've been up there, and it's a wonderful family atmosphere and a very kind of inclusive. What difference has it made to your life to be involved there?
It's given me so many new opportunities, helped me make friends, helped me build my confidence. I've actually got a very close friend that I've made there, and we've stayed in touch over the last few months since we've known each other, and we're really close now, and it's all to do with Sheppey FM that I've known this person, and they've helped me be introduced to new people, and if it weren't for them, I wouldn't be here today.
Well, it is tremendous that you are, and tell me what you actually do on Sheppey FM. Describe it. What happens when you arrive in the building?
A lot of chatting at first when I walk through the door. I co-host, so I will help choose the music. I will read out the next song coming up, chat, like do chat shows and things. We'll talk about different things. The only thing I don't do is the computers because I'm not able to.
But it sounds like you're doing everything else. And now that you've discovered the wonderful world of radio, where do you hope to be with it in maybe a year's time?
I'm really not sure. I would say I would like to stay with Sheppey FM for as long as possible because I feel that what they do for the community is amazing and I would like to remain a part of that for as long as I can.
Well, now, I've been to Sheppey, as I say, and I know what they do, but I'd like you to share what you know that Sheppey FM do for the community with my listeners.
Okay, so Sheppey FM are helping the community all the time. They provide lots of different opportunities for people with all different disabilities, such as myself. They do a lot of work experience, so we have a lot of work experience students coming in and things like that, really. They have lots of different projects going on. One that I've known about is the mental health project. There's been all different community projects going on. They are brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
How would you say being included in somewhere like Sheppey FM and the kinds of skills that you've already described, how does that benefit, how does that improve people's lives?
I think that people like me who have different disabilities, like with me, I don't have sight, it's taught me that actually I can go out there, I can do whatever I want to do. It's helped me realise that actually we can do what we want. We have different opportunities out there if we just looked for them.
Well, Abby, I've really enjoyed our conversation. I hope to come and see you all in Sheppey soon. Meanwhile, it's back into the theatre to enjoy the rest of the evening. But in the meantime, many congratulations on your award tonight.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Abby for sharing her story, which makes a fine end to this edition of In Radio Conversations for the In Radio podcast. I've taken quite enough of your time now, but more from this neck of the woods soon. In Radio.